U.S. government bonds were the in thing this week, but much riskier bonds are having a different experience. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Trade and currency tensions prompted some investors to buy U.S. government bonds in recent days, pulling down ambient interest rates, less so this morning. But what also bears watching are high-yield bonds, the much riskier ones to which many corporations have become addicted. Diane Swonk is the chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton.
The junk bond market, this is really important because nearly a third of the almost $9 trillion in corporate bonds that have been issued in this expansion, and we're at a record high in that issuance, has been in the junk bond market, and any weakening in the U.S. economy could cause a downgrade in the rating of those bonds.
And what have we seen this week in this high-yield junk bond market?
Even as bond yields have been coming down in the government bond market, the spreads have widened to their highest pace in the sovereign debt crisis in the junk bond market since 2011. And that means it's going to be harder for those junk bond issuers to not only get access to credit, but also to turn it over. Much of it is short-term credit.
So it's not a niche thing, right? It's all the rage, high-yield debt.
Exactly. No, this is not a niche thing. And it also has really kept a lot of companies going when perhaps they should have thought more aggressively about becoming leaner and meaner, and we call it extend and pretend. It is what creates, in the wake of a crisis, what we call zombie firms, like you saw in Japan, firms that just are sucking up capital and not allowing the rest of the economy to move forward. Not only do they accelerate us into recessions, they hold us back when we try to recover, so that's why we watch them so carefully.
And to explain just this notion of spreads widening this week, it's like if you're trying to sell your house and there's a large gap between what you want for the house and what a buyer is willing to pay, that's not a good situation.
Exactly. And you're not willing to move unless you get your price, and they're not willing to pay unless they get theirs.
Diane Swonk at Grant Thornton, thank you so much for the briefing.
Thank you.
In the U.S., the big pizza companies have been struggling. Papa John's reported this week its sales were weak. Domino's reported tepid sales last month. Pizza Hut recently announced it's closing hundreds of dine-in restaurants. Here's Marketplace's Erica Barris.
Domino's, with its pizza delivered in 30 minutes or less, spurred a few other profitable competitors like Papa John's and Pizza Hut to follow suit, says Christopher Muller, hospitality professor at Boston University. But these days,
you can get anything at any time, and that does change the consumer's behavior.
Hannah Spencer is a food analyst at Mintel that found a third of consumers are ordering fewer pizzas. They are ordering other foods, curry, sushi, empanadas, delivered by services like Grubhub and Uber Eats. Spencer says to stay competitive, the pizza companies are trying to make ordering
easier, faster, more intuitive, one click, one text, order, done. And that's something third-party delivery apps haven't overall mastered yet.
The food business in general is more competitive, says Catherine Helens at the University of North Carolina.
It makes it so much harder for the conventional, perhaps more bland, middle ground players to really thrive.
And there are more local pizza shop deliveries, too. So while pizza is still very popular, more players are vying for a slice of the pie. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Not only does natural gas make carbon dioxide linked to climate change when you burn it, just pumping it out of the ground releases loads of CO2. Well, today, Chevron turned on one of the biggest carbon capture facilities in the world. It's off of Western Australia. The $2.5 billion project was required to meet Australian emissions rules. The CO2 gets pumped into underground reservoirs forever, it is hoped. The project ran into technical hitches and ran behind. I asked BBC International business correspondent Theo Leggett if this tech will spread or if it's more specific to the Western Australia geology.
Well, if carbon capture and storage worked everywhere and could be made to work efficiently everywhere, I think we'd see an awful lot more of it. The big argument against it at the moment is that it is expensive technology and in some ways it's not particularly well proven. And analysts will tell you that a better way of reducing carbon dioxide emissions might be to invest more in clean tech, in renewables, for example. But the resources industry is very interested in carbon capture and storage because it does mean that potentially you could end up burning fossil fuels for longer or in greater quantities. A lot of resources companies have these resources beneath the ground, and there are concerns they may never actually be able to exploit them. And obviously around the world now, many governments have plans to reduce carbon dioxide output.
While the Trump administration withdrew the U.S. from the Paris climate change rules that encourage this sort of thing, Australia is all in. Sometimes eating is not an experience. Shoving toast into your face while scanning your emails is one example. But in Los Angeles, some restaurants are really trying to play to the experience of dining out by making food that looks really weird. Diners are clamoring to pay for tickets to eat a bowl of orange and neon blue noodles swimming in a pool of bright green broth, Marketplace's Sasha Woodruff reports.
Atop a hill in Hollywood, outside an established Japanese restaurant called Yamashiro, diners wait for a ramen dish that is probably more experience than meal. Customer Sarah Katz read about it online and was intrigued.
I'm looking to be surprised and to do something that would be cool and different.
Diners are led into Nakamura, a UV-lit mobile restaurant housed in a shipping container. Chef Skip Engelbrecht serves up his ramen meal.
Anaki mushrooms, nori, six-minute egg, togarashi, and the lumen noodle.
The otherworldly concoctions come from natural substances. Chlorophyll glows red, quinine that tastes bitter glows a bright blue, and for a lurid green, vitamin B12.
It is, of course, very bitter, so you have to be quite careful with your balancing of all the flavors.
That's Sam Bompas of Bompas & Parr, a food experience studio that helped create the fluorescent noodles. Diners pay $83 to stand at a counter and $158 for a sit-down meal that lasts about 30 minutes and includes a glowing cocktail and dessert. Romy Maloon of the arts organization Dashboard helped produce the mobile restaurant. She says at capacity, 105 people move through the space per night.
This is a ticketed experience. We have a good idea of what our food costs are going to be up front.
It sold out the first 3 weeks and dropped to about 75% of capacity after that. The National Restaurant Association expects restaurant sales to reach a record $863 billion this year. But foot traffic is down as diners turn more to delivery. The association's Hudson Reilly says customers want new experiences.
It is entirely logical that pop-ups only become more prevalent.
Full-time restaurants associated with pop-ups can benefit from the buzz, and they don't have to worry about long-term costs. Bompas and his partner started creating short-lived food experiences about 10 years ago. They still draw people in with things like
a 200-course meal, which was a course dropping every 7 minutes and 14 seconds for 24 hours.
This ramen shop is wrapping up its 6-week Los Angeles run. The creators are looking for a new city to pop up and offer diners a taste of glowing noodles. I'm Sasha Woodruff for Marketplace.
If you would like to see a video of the glowy ramen, you can visit Marketplace's Instagram or Twitter feeds. There it is. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.